Our study at this time begins in the 7th chapter of Joshua, and we're ready to begin at the 2nd verse. In the last lesson, we'd gotten through this first verse of the 7th chapter of Joshua, and as we noted, this verse started with the word but. Here Joshua had been given great power and prominence. His fame was noised throughout all the country, but the children of Israel committed a trespass in the accursed thing. And here we learn in this verse very briefly that one named Achan took of the accursed thing. That is, he took a part of the spoils from the land of Jericho, from the city of Jericho. This was forbidden by God to be done. He had committed a sin, a trespass, and consequently we're going to see now where the whole nation of Israel is going to have to suffer because of this sin of Achan. However, nobody knows about it at this time among the children of Israel. Joshua doesn't know about it, and so Joshua proceeds now as though nothing had happened, and we're going to see the consequences of this sin of Achan. So in the 2nd verse, and Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is beside Bethaven on the east side of Bethel, and spake unto them, saying, go up and view the country. And the men went up and viewed Ai. Now this town of Ai was the next city in line for the conquering army of the Israelites. It's about 15 or 18 miles or so west of Jericho, so they're really not very far from it. And it's very close to Bethel, and we find that later when they engage in battle, after this first defeat, that they will engage in the battle of Bethel and Ai together. But the first thing Joshua does here is to have men to go up and to view the country. That is, he's going to send out some more spies, some more reconnaissance people to size the situation up and see just how hard the battle's going to be. And the men went up and viewed Ai. And they returned to Joshua and said unto him, let not all the people go up, but let about 2,000 or 3,000 men go up and smite Ai, and make not all the people to labor thither, for they are but few. So the report comes back so favorably that Ai is going to be such an easy city to capture that they say, don't even send all the people. Just send about 2,000 or 3,000 men. Don't make all the people go up. It's not necessary to bother everybody because only a portion of our army is going to be needed to capture this city of Ai. For they are but few. That is, they're just not going to be a very formidable foe for us to have to fight against. So you see, this report then indicates that it should be easy for them to capture this city. And under normal circumstances with God's people and God leading them, it would have been no problem at all. But we're going to learn now that because of this sin of Achan, that God was not with them. Having the same kind of a warfare that they were when they attacked Jericho, because God is not with them in this battle because of their sin. So in verse 4 he says, so there went up thither of the people about 3,000 men, and they fled before the men of Ai. Now here is quite a reversal for these Israelites. They're used to being victorious. They're used to having God to give them the victory. In their last few battles, this is what had happened. But now they went up to Ai and they fled before the men of Ai. They were put to rout. They were defeated. And he goes on in verse 5 and says, and the men of Ai smote of them about 36 men. For they chased them from before the gate even unto Shebrim, and smote them in the going down. Wherefore the hearts of the people melted and became as water. So we have quite a change of circumstance now. These people are not used to losing not only a battle, they're not used to losing any soldiers. Here they suffered a defeat and lost about 36 men. Out of 3,000 men, 36 is not a very large number to lose when you're engaged in a battle and you're actually being defeated and losing the battle. But they're not used to losing any, which tells us a very important thing, that when God was with this people, they were invincible. It was a righteous, a religious war. It was one that God was in favor of, and it was one that God gave them the victory for. But whenever God wasn't with them and they lost 36 men, it was a terrible calamity. They just couldn't believe it. And so it's quite a tremendous setback then for this army of Israel. So in verse 6, "And Joshua rent his clothes and fell to the earth upon his face before the ark of the Lord until the eventide, he and the elders of Israel, and put dust upon their heads." Joshua just couldn't understand it. He didn't know what the problem was. Here God was supposed to be with them. They were supposed to be successful. And he went about his business as usual, and he found that they were now defeated. And it was just a catastrophe for Joshua. And so notice how he reacts to this. He rent his clothes. That is, he went through the act of actual grief and mourning because of what had happened. Of course, we can just see the picture of them bringing back the 36 bodies of those who had been slain. And no telling about those who had been wounded. And the whole camp now was going to be in a terrible state of grief because of this. And so Joshua not only rent his clothes, but he fell to the earth upon his face before the ark of the Lord. Assumed the extreme posture of sorrow and grief and humility. And he did this right before the ark of the Lord. That is, he was as close as he could get to the very presence of the Lord. He went to the Lord with his problem. And he wanted the Lord to help him have the answer to it. He knew that to ever be successful, he had to still go through the Lord. He couldn't devise his own means. He couldn't go back and say, "Well, let's see if we can just send more men out there." He knew something was wrong, and he wanted to get to the root of the problem, so he had to go to the Lord for it. And this very same principle is so true for us today. When we see that somehow or other we're suffering a chastisement, we don't know exactly why we're being chastised or what we've done wrong, the thing for us to do is go to the Lord. Let's get some guidance and figure out exactly what is going wrong. What kind of changes do we have to make to get back into the good graces of God? Because then we're going to be successful whenever God's for us. And that's exactly what Joshua did. He went before the ark of the Lord. He fell to the earth upon his face after he had rent his clothes. And then he was there until the eventide. He stayed there until dark, till the day was over. He spent the rest of the day in this posture. He and the elders of Israel, and put dust upon their heads. The elders of Israel joined him in this. They knew that there was some bad thing wrong to cause them to suffer this defeat. They didn't know what it was, but the only thing they need to do now is go to God with it, humble themselves, have a contrite spirit, that is a spirit that's been crushed, a spirit that's been bruised and broken, and then put themselves completely at the disposal of God, His mercy, His will, so that they could do whatever God wanted them to do. And so in verse 7, Joshua said, "Alas, O Lord God, wherefore hast thou at all brought this people over Jordan to deliver us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us? Would to God we had been content and dwelt on the other side of Jordan." Now Joshua is so taken aback that he speaks in a manner here that he probably is not too pleased with as he later reflects upon this. He asked God, "Why did you bring this people over Jordan to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us? We'd been better, we'd been content to just stayed on the other side of Jordan and kept the land that we'd already acquired over there. We didn't have to get any more land. If this is going to happen to us, we could just stayed over there. We'd have been content over there." I mean, he was really, really at a low ebb. You can see how Joshua has just about had it now. He is so discouraged and so disheartened that he just doesn't know which way to turn. And so, verse 8, "O Lord, what shall I say when Israel turneth their backs before their enemies? How can I answer this? What's the explanation for it? What shall I say?" He's looking for answers. He's looking for reasons. Why were we defeated? What else is there to do now that Israel has been unable to accomplish this next victory that we're supposed to have? What shall I say when Israel turneth their backs before their enemies? For the Canaanites and all the inhabitants of the land shall hear of it, and shall environ us round, and cut off our name from the earth. So he says, our name's going to go to nothing now. We're going to lose our reputation. We're not going to be counted as a formidable foe anymore. The other nations are going to lose their fear of us. Our job's going to be twice as hard now because they're going to consider that we're defeatable. And then hastily he adds, not only is he concerned about their name on the earth, but he says, and what wilt thou do unto thy great name? What about your name, God? You're going to get a name for not having led us properly, for not having given us victory, for having forsaken us, for having deserted us. And so, what about your name? And of course, this should be one of our greatest concerns. We're quite concerned, of course, with the kind of a name and reputation that we have, how people think about us and how people act toward us, but we should be even more concerned with the kind of a reputation that our God has in our community and in our nation and among those with whom we have to do. We should do nothing that would in any wise jeopardize the name of the Holy God of Heaven. We should always hold Him in utmost respect, awesome reverence. We should not laugh or go along with those jokes that are made about God. We should not condone in any ways by our actions those who would take His name lightly or use it in vain. Those who would make remarks with the name of God and really have no true meaning in what they say. These should make us all very displeased, as though they were talking about a member of our family, our own son or daughter, our own mother or father. We should not allow these things to give us any kind of pleasure at all, because we're concerned about the name of God, just as Joshua was. So the Lord now gives Joshua the answer, beginning here in verse 10. And the Lord said unto Joshua, get thee up, wherefore liest thou thus upon thy face? Now, there's a reason for this, Joshua. We're going to get to the bottom of it now, and then there's something for you to do to correct this thing. There's a correction to be made. Verse 11, Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant which I commanded them. Now, there's a sin that's caused this, Joshua, and that's always the thing that brings about a separation between us and God. Sin. If you want something to separate you between you and your God, the true and living God in heaven, then you sin. And sin will do it every time. Sin brings about the separation. So he says, Israel has sinned. Oh, that's the answer. That's the problem right there. No need to go any further with any kind of battle, any kind of conquering the land of Canaan, until you get the sin taken care of. Sin has to be attended to at this moment. Israel has sinned, and they have also transgressed my covenant which I commanded them. Now, the covenant that God made with them when they took this city of Jericho included the fact that they would not take any of the spoils of this city for their own. All of the spoils, all the goods of the city that were preserved, which would be the silver and the gold and the vessels of iron and brass, all of these things were to be used for the Lord's service and none to be taken by an individual. So when somebody took this, as Achan did, he had transgressed the covenant which God commanded them. He'd gone against the agreement God had with the people. And so he explains this in detail. For they have even taken of the accursed thing, and have also stolen, and dissembled also, and they have put it even among their own stuff. Now here's the description of how this sin was carried about. They have taken of the accursed thing. That is, they were not to take of it. They did. And he says they have also stolen. That is, they have taken what they did illegally. They have taken it in such a way that they realized that they were being a thief. They didn't do it innocently or ignorantly. They did it knowingly with what they did, so they had to steal to do it. And they have dissembled also, that is, they pretended that they didn't do it when they did. They've concealed this thing. They've been a hypocrite about it. They've dissembled also, and they have put it even among their own stuff. So they'd hidden it among their stuff as though it belonged to them as an individual. They pretended like it was theirs. They were deceptive about how they acquired this, and consequently, this is the sequence then of their sin. They took of the accursed thing, they stole it, they dissembled about it, and they put it among their own stuff. So the person here was very definitely doing a sin of commission. It wasn't an ignorant act. He was aware of what he was doing, and he did it all on purpose. Verse 12. Therefore, the children of Israel could not stand before their enemies, but turned their back before their enemies, because they were accursed. Neither will I be with you any more, except you destroy the accursed from among you. Now, that's the stipulation that God made. You've got to get this sin cleaned out. You've got to destroy the accursed from among you, or I will not be with you anymore. This is all of it. I will not give you any more victories until you get this sin straightened up. Now, that's always the attitude that God has towards sin. That's the attitude he has even today towards sin. When we're guilty of sin, there's no use of us going any further with service to God until we get that sin taken care of, because that sin is going to come between us and God, and it's going to separate us from our God. God will not be compatible with sin. He doesn't intend to be. He never has been, and he doesn't intend to be any time. And so that's the way he spelled it out to Joshua at this time. So in verse 13 he says, "Up, sanctify the people, and say, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow." Now it was night time when Joshua was still in this state of humility before this Ark of the Covenant. And so God tells him, when he does speak to them, he says, "Sanctify the people and say, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow." Now, to sanctify something is to cleanse it or to purify it, to prepare it for the service of God. And as long as this sin was in the camp, as long as this sin was among the people, even though only one person or one family were guilty of it, still the people had some cleansing of themselves to do. They had to sanctify themselves. So he says, "Sanctify yourselves against tomorrow. For thus saith the Lord God of Israel, there is an accursed thing in the midst of thee, O Israel. Thou canst not stand before thine enemies until you take away the accursed thing from among you." So we see that back during the time of this miraculous intervention of God, that God would win the battles for them when they were faithful to him, but when they were not faithful, they could not be successful in battle. God would not be with them in it. And this tells us something for sure, that today, in the carnal warfare that men engage in, God does not involve himself in it like he did then. He does not have one side that is his people fighting against another side that's not his people. These carnal warfare engagements today that are waged by one nation upon another are not something that is condoned by God for his people to participate in. They are not religious wars today as he had back then. If so, one side would do all the winning and would not lose any people as long as they didn't sin. And we see that's the way it was with the children of Israel. So, before they could go any further with their success, they had to get rid of this accursed thing. And he said, "You cannot stand before thine enemies until you take away the accursed thing from among you." So in verse 14 he says, "In the morning thereof ye shall be brought according to your tribes, and it shall be that the tribe which the Lord taketh shall come according to the families thereof, and the family which the Lord shall take come by households, and the household which the Lord shall take shall come man by man." So he was to organize a system now whereby he would pinpoint the person who was guilty. The guilty person did not come forward. He did not say, did not volunteer that he had done this thing. So the way the Lord determined it, so that Joshua would know who it was, he had them to first of all come tribe by tribe, and then the proper tribe in which the guilty person was located was selected, and then it was according to the families. And then when the proper family was found, then it was down to the household. And when the proper household was found, then he went in that household man by man until they discovered the guilty person. Verse 15, "And it shall be that he that is taken with the accursed thing shall be burnt with fire, he and all that he hath, because he hath transgressed the covenant of the Lord, and because he hath wrought folly in Israel." So the sentence that's going to be pronounced then upon the person who's guilty of this sin is that he will be burnt with fire, he and all that he hath, because he's transgressed the covenant of the Lord and because he's wrought folly in Israel. The law of God would not permit this person who had gone this far. He did not confess his sin. He had to be discovered by the meticulous business of searching out one tribe, then another tribe, and then the families, and then the individual men. So when he was found out about, then he would have to be put to death. Now this is the way the law of Moses was. We read in Hebrews 10, verse 28, "He that despised Moses' law died without mercy under two or three witnesses." Now that's just the long and the short of it. If you despise Moses' law, you died without mercy when two or three witnesses were able then to pinpoint you as being the guilty person. And he goes on in Hebrews and says, "Of how much sore punishment suppose ye shall he be thought worthy who hath trod underfoot the Son of God, and hath counted the blood of the covenant wherewith he was sanctified an unholy thing, and hath done despite under the Spirit of grace." So we even today in New Testament times, living under the Christian age, also have just as much of a fear of punishment when we then count the New Testament covenant an unholy thing, or the blood that Christ has shed is an unholy thing. Because God will not stand for sin. He will not cohabit with it. And sin has to be taken care of once it's been committed. And in this case, the man forced him to search him out, so he was going to have to die. He was going to have to be put to death because of his guilt. And we will see later on in this chapter where this certainly was carried out. Well, our time has expired at this point, so we're going to close there. Until next time, this is Dr. N.C. Crouch saying, goodbye, friend.